Welcome to Digital Health Talks. Each week, we meet with the healthcare leaders making an immeasurable difference in equity, access, and quality. Hear about what tech is worth investing in and what isn't as we focus on the innovations that deliver. Join Megan Antonelli, Janae Sharp, and Shahid Shah for a weekly No BS deep dive on what's really making an impact in healthcare.
Hi, welcome to Health Impact. This is Megan Antonelli, and I am here with Ed Marks. I've met Ed Marks many times. He has been a speaker for us back in Texas when he was at Texas Healthcare Resources and in New York and Cleveland Clinic. And now, Ed, tell us a little bit about where you are and what you've been up to.
Well, first, Megan, thanks for having me. I'm super, super excited. I think you're one of the bright people, personas in healthcare. So super thrilled to be with you. Yeah, I made another career shift. This is probably maybe my third, but as you mentioned, I'm a longtime CIO, CDO type, and then I served on the vendor partner side for a few years, got some good experience there, and now I've decided with both that as backgrounds, I went independent and kind of bridged the gap between the two that sometimes exists. So that's what I'm doing today.
Well, that's fabulous. And I know with the incredible experience that you've had that bridging that gap, which is more and more, there's more companies, more organizations that are trying to help innovators sort of navigate the complex and often long sales cycles and innovation cycles within healthcare systems. But one of the things that we've had a chance to talk about both on the Health Impact stage and in person, of course, is your healthcare journey. And you have a book coming out with my very favorite healthcare CIO, Chris Ross, and called Diagnosed, an Insider's Guide for Your Healthcare Journey. So tell us about that. I know you've been working on it for a while and it's coming out this fall. So I'm so excited. But tell us about the trajectory there and what we can expect.
Yeah, it is about 4 years in the making, which is fine. I think it got better. The longer it took, sort of the better it got. We were very blessed to have Mayo Clinic as our publisher, and we received a gift from them in terms of our editor, who's been with us the entire 4 years of this journey. And she's really good, and she doesn't care who Chris Ross is or who Ed Marks is. She just tells it like it is. And so she's helped really make the book a lot more focused and a lot more practical. And yeah, it really was birthed out of both of Chris's, my illnesses. You know, I had multiple illnesses with a random heart attack and then a cancer, and Chris got hit with cancer, not just once, but twice. In fact, we had started the book, and that's part of the reason for the delay. We had started the book and then he got cancer again. So one of our very first in-person meetings was he was still in the hospital recovering from some major surgery. And we erased the whiteboard that they had in the Mayo Clinic hospital room and took over in terms of outlining the book. So that's sort of the genesis of the book. And yeah, been working that for 4 years. Comes out this fall with a sneak preview at HIMSS shows someday.
Great. Yeah. Well, and I know, I think we interview a lot of folks, a lot of authors who have written books, and many of them sort of focus on helping people within healthcare navigate the business and the operations and the challenges of healthcare from a business and a technology standpoint, but your book is really focused on the patient, for the patients. Tell us a little bit about, obviously, some of the what those challenges are that you are trying to address, but also how. Give us some of the highlights.
So Chris and I had cancer at the same time going through treatment. Of course, we knew each other. I was Cleveland Clinic CIO and Chris at Mayo. And we had good experiences, no doubt about it. But we came to realize when you get to the depth of that sort of illness, you begin to realize how fortunate we are. And here we are, executives in premier healthcare organizations getting great experience. And it's not like that for everyone. And our wish is that it could be like that for everyone. And so we started writing a book that contemplated how could we help a patient to receive an excellent patient experience no matter where they might be. Rural hospital, big system hospital, for-profit, not-for-profit, academic, pediatrics, whatever, everyone deserves to have a great experience. So that's how we approached it. We didn't start off that way. It was originally sort of for those of us already in healthcare, But then two things happened. One, we realized that we've been talking about patient experience for many, many, many years, and we haven't moved the needle very much. So what good is another book going to do? And the second thing is we realized that patient experience is indeed the responsibility ultimately of the patient and their family, village. So that's how we came to sort of reorient this book and really write it for the public.
Mm-hmm. Now, in that the sort of the writing of the book happened during the pandemic, are there parts and lessons that you saw or even changes? I mean, the industry has fundamentally changed in the last 3 years that you've incorporated into that.
Yeah. One thing that I think the pandemic kind of brought out, you know, there's several obvious ones. So one maybe not so obvious, but it might seem obvious after you talk about it. And that is to look at healthcare as truly a horizontal journey instead of vertical stovepipes. So oftentimes in our healthcare systems, we're really good in our particular area. I mean, we've been doing process improvement and Six Sigma, all this kind of stuff, and we're really good in our area. So let's just make up a fictitious example of radiology. Oh my gosh, we got a great process. Once you're in, man, it's going to be perfect. And we get you in efficiently, we get you out efficiently, you have a good experience. But then there's these handoffs. And even in the greatest systems, this happens. And so there's handoffs. So one real example I'll give you, I'll use my dad. So I was helping my dad through a rather complex healthcare journey, and same hospital, same health system, really good one. And they would schedule his one appointment at a radiology office to get updated scans. And it was located in the same building as his neurosurgeon. Now, you would think that they would schedule him because it took a lot of effort to get him to these exams at the time, because he wasn't very ambulatory. So someone had to come pick him up, put him in an ambulance, essentially, take him there, come back. That whole thing was like a 3-4 hour ordeal. Now, so I had to call and say, instead of having these appointments a day apart or 5 hours apart, why can't we put them together and look at it as one? And they did, to their credit, they did. So I kept doing that for him in that journey. But most people wouldn't know to make those type of calls or that it could be different. And so that's why we really focus sort of looking at this horizontally instead of vertically. So that really came out in the pandemic when we saw a lot of silos when it came to virtual care. Like we tried to duplicate the in-office experience with tech and you couldn't do that. And so we kind of learned that we were siloed. So that was like one key thing that I think was brought out.
And that's so important. I mean, I think so much of the patient experience and having been sort of part of healthcare and engaged in healthcare as a patient, as a caregiver, as all of those things, but also as advocate and just healthcare geek in general, that you realize that people, young and old, have this kind of don't ask, don't be the squeaky wheel attitude. I mean, certainly watching my parents try to navigate the healthcare system and then being like, no, don't say that. Right. Don't ask that. When I would walk in, like I was about to sue before the care got bad. But I think as you're giving that sort of insider's guide to being a patient, that is so important. And that some things are just, they're built one way, but it's easy to change it if you just asked to do it the right way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, what you're describing, Megan, is sort of what's known as the white coat syndrome. And we studied that quite a bit. And that came out in some of the research we did in the book. And indeed, especially the older generations, but I think it happens. We're sort of socialized that way, not to really question anything and not to realize or to exercise your choice. Not everyone has a choice in who they see, but most do. But we never think about that. Like, I want to interview, like, if this person's going to have my life in their hands, you can interview that person, make sure that you're comfortable with that person. Mm-hmm. And if not, you can choose someone else, or you can look up reviews on that person, but you can get involved, directly involved in your own journey and make decisions that make you the most comfortable. So new ideas that emerge.
Yeah. And then one thing that I've been thinking about a lot, which has a lot to do with patient experience, which is about those choices, right? I mean, there's choices of, do I want to go to a women's clinic, a virtual women's clinic, a virtual weight loss clinic, a virtual menopause clinic? Where do I want to bring my children to? Where do I want to have that healthcare? And so all of that is changing now, right? I mean, and as a person who's worked in a hospital and seen that, you know, hospitals are not necessarily the first choice of where you want to get your care. Have you been thinking about that? I mean, more as you look at not just with the book, but as you advise technology companies and healthcare systems on kind of what they're preparing for.
Yeah.
What do you think that's going to look like? I mean, as the One Medicals versus the Found Healthcares all compete in this space.
Yeah, I'm been a big advocate at hospital at home and see that as the future. Although I have to admit, I was definitely wrong when it came to the pandemic. So prior to the pandemic, I was responsible sort of digital strategy where I came from. And one of our objectives and key results, which we thought would happen in 3 to 5 years, would be 50% of our outpatient visits would be virtual, 25% of our inpatient visits days would be at home. And then we even had one about doing surgery transcontinental. And when that pandemic happened, I thought for sure we were going to hit those numbers, right? And sure, as we all know, we saw a great uptick. Sometimes, depending on the organization, 80, 85% of all visits were virtual. And then it came crashing down. And I don't know about you, Megan, but I was kind of surprised how low we went. I was thinking we would hover maybe at 25%, but a lot of health systems tell me that they're back to where they were pre-pandemic, or maybe the last time I looked at an average of averages, which is some time ago, because I don't think people are reporting on it that much anymore because it's not happening very much. It was about 8%. So we went from 1%. So Chris always reminds me of this, though. He says, Ed, but we went from 1% to 8%. That's a pretty big change. So in that case, it was good. But I do think we're going to go more to the home for the reasons you were alluding to. The patient experience is better. The cost is less. The quality has proven to be the same or better. So there's no reason not to continue to look this direction and make plans to get there.
Right. Yeah, no, it is interesting. I mean, my son had surgery during the pandemic and it was knee surgery, wasn't it? But we did that, all of the imaging and everything, because we lived down south of LA and he was going to Cedars. So we weren't going to go into the hospital. It was also far and it was so convenient, right? Yeah. I mean, so for folks in the burbs like us, I want to go to the major metro hospital, but it's hard, but the telemedicine really helps with that. So, and it's interesting because you would think they would give that incentive would be there. So, I do wonder, did the numbers go down more because the hospitals aren't supporting it as much as they were for certain specialties where it's no longer necessary? Or is it the patient choice? So coming back to the experience of that, because it was a great experience.
Yeah, I get the sense that it's both of those. I had the same sort of thing. I had a knee challenge during the pandemic and I was getting physical therapy all virtual and it worked fine. And then I remember the day they were like, hey, you can come in now. And I'm like, why would I drive 30 some minutes to go for an hour PT session and drive 30 minutes back? And then when I can do it at home in front of the Zoom with a great therapist. But not everyone feels that way. Like my dad, going back to my dad, he prefers sort of that social thing, that in-person. But I think from a hospital point of view, they carry a lot of debt in those structures. And one way to get reimbursed and paid for that is in-person care. And so I think that's part of the driver. Part of it is change management. It's like, well, we're kind of used to that. That's what we do. We all go to this place to receive care. So I think it's multifaceted, but we have to get to hospital at home, I believe, because one, the tech is enabling a lot of that, but people are demanding better experiences and they don't want to go drive and wait around, wait in rooms. And so I think it's going to happen. Yeah. And we got a little bit of a boost through the pandemic. It'll just help that trajectory continue.
Right. And as the connections between those, in some cases, whether it's sort of disparate platforms, where we used to say the medical home was your primary care doctor, but now you've got maybe it's a PT app that is taking care of that, but then connecting all of those. But then, so one thing I wanted to ask in terms of in the research and the work that you've done for this, like, what do you think the takeaways in terms of technology are? I mean, and we've talked about kind of technology isn't always the fix, right? The technology is generally there. A lot of the times it's culture, but I'm asking specifically, what are the technologies that are moving the needle on patients?
Yeah. So going back to the beginning of our conversation, and just to frame it again, the book Diagnosed, An Insider's Guide for Your Healthcare Journey, that's the book for the patient. And as we did this research, and we did tons of focus groups with patients of all kinds, of marginalized communities, we wanted to make sure everyone had representation. We also did a lot of focus groups with our peers and other healthcare executives. And so out of that, we had a lot of knowledge gained, and we created that white paper for that, which again will be coming out before the book. And that white paper is written for those of us in healthcare, and it covers about five different areas that we thought were germane for everyone to be aware of, just sort of the best practices we were finding out there. And again, none of this is like Ed Marks or Chris Ross or super smart people. No, we just happened to spend a lot of time in this and did a lot of research and a lot of focus groups. And so we're just sharing back what we learned. Only one of them had anything really to do with technology. And so the rest were non-technology, and most of them didn't cost anything. That's the other one of the major findings, because a lot of times people say, well, we want to do more, but it costs too much money. So we sort of refute that argument. But I have to give credit to Chris for this concept. He goes, yeah, not only do we need a digital front end, but we need a digital back end, which we don't talk about. We talk a lot about the front end, right? The patient portal and the ability to schedule, look at my results, all those sort of things, wayfinding. But what about the back end? Because that's where a lot of care gaps exist. So after I'm discharged, there's not all that information that I need is necessarily in the portals today. And so it's not in the front end because it's kind of back-end-ish. And so it's not just the bill. We're not talking about billing and things like that when we talk about back-end, but it's really knitting the whole front end and the back end together. And there's just something missing in the middle oftentimes. And like my discharge instructions, yeah, they gave me a printout, and I was confused when they were telling me because I was still dealing with the trauma or whatever the reasons were. Is like, how do I really know how I'm doing? And do I have to contact someone, or can I just look on with this technology and sort of get my questions answered? And there's a lot of that in the middle that I still needs to be cleaned up a little bit. So that's what we mean when we say, make sure you have a strong digital back end as well.
And that's important. And when you would think, I mean, because of sort of readmission penalties and all of those things, that financially hospitals are incentivized to watch that back end and to give that proper care, but it isn't as easy, right? I mean, when you are going in, you're actively engaged, you're looking, you're asking, and then when you're out, you're healing, and it's a lot harder. So that hand-holding, digital hand-holding can be more challenging, but certainly I've just, with conference season in full swing, seeing a lot of the remote patient monitoring tools that are happening and various communication things, it's pretty impressive to see what's out there to kind of begin to facilitate that, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as you look to some of the events and things that are coming up, what has your message been to the folks that you're advising around, whether it's the people, the process, or the technology? What are you seeing, and what's your one takeaway for us and for them?
Yeah, well, I think the major takeaway, and I think we start off, we've done a couple of presentations or have worked on presentations that we plan to give. And I think that one of the key messages for sure is that experience is never the reason for the successful or unsuccessful outcome, but could be the accelerator of either. Mm-hmm. So we need to have a focus on experience in a real way, because it will impact outcome. And so we need to be very intentional. And the other part of that is that experience, creating a great experience for your patients, doesn't have to cost money. It doesn't have to have a person with a title of patient experience. You don't have to have an office of patient experience. My favorite example, Megan, if I can go really quick and just give you a tangible example how this manifests itself. There's one hospital when we're doing these focus groups, where the CEO every day, and I don't care about scale because there's a way to handle the scale, but it's a 275-bed hospital. Every day, he starts his day visiting every single patient. they don't need a chief patient experience officer. And there's nothing wrong with having one. So don't take that negatively. But you don't have to have one. And they don't have an office. But what do you think that does culturally when you know your CEO is going to be with your patient every single day talking to them? Everyone follows that lead. And of course, you can scale that easily. So no one can say, well, that's a small hospital. Well, no, if you have a bigger hospital, you probably have more direct reports and each of you can divide up and it could be 275 for each. So, but the point, and I think it's a great hope, right? If I'm thinking about how do I do patient experience and oh my gosh, I can't afford all this technology and stuff. The technology is secondary. You can make it happen by the way you live, by the way you act, by the way you model to everyone in the organization, just how important it is to make sure that patients have a great experience. So that's the key takeaway.
I think I love that. And I think that's so, as we think of where healthcare happens and why you want it to happen in certain places versus others, you don't choose to go to the hospital so that you can be remotely monitored.
Right.
So having that interaction with both your, whether it's your physician or the physician leadership within the health system, or whether it's the CEO, you know, will make that, but does make that difference, because that's why you're there, as you said, for your father, the social aspect of it, that feeling of not being isolated, but having a care team that is taking care of you. So important and absolutely scalable. So as always, Ed, a pleasure talking to you. Thank you. I look forward to seeing you soon at upcoming Health Impact and other programs out there. And I can't wait for the book and the white paper.
All right. Well, thanks again, Megan, for having me. And I look forward to seeing you at a Health Impact conference.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Health Impact's Digital Health Talk. Don't miss another podcast. Subscribe at digitalhealthtalks.com. And to join us at our next face-to-face event, visit healthimpactlive.com.